It's interesting when you think about relationships to think of one that can bring tears of joy and tears of sadness, can cause you great hurt, but yet can also cause you great happiness, can cause you fear, it can cause you comfort, and all of that surrounding plus many other opposite emotions we could say could be found in God's relationship concerning the home. For the past few weeks, we have been following a series of lessons on respect. We've talked about respect for God. We've talked about how the Apostle Paul teaches us concerning respect in the book of Ephesians through the different walks that we have. Last week, we talked about the respect that husbands and wives show each other. And this morning, what I would like for us to do is to continue with our thoughts on down in Ephesians chapter 6. Just as Paul finishes his discussion of wives and husbands there at the end of chapter 5, he immediately goes into chapter 6 and, as Ben read for us this morning, talks about the kind of respect that's to be found within the home. And so what I'd like for us to do this morning is to discuss this both from a child's standpoint and a parent's standpoint. And I would encourage all of our younger people, if you understand what I'm saying right now, to sit up and to listen, because this lesson's for you. This is a lesson that I want you to think about as you think about your parents and as you think about your walk with God, which is where we're going to start this morning. When we look at Ephesians chapter 6, Paul opens it, the next phase in these lessons on respect, by saying, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." As we think about the Apostle Paul here, I think once again we can go back to his writings on what he said way back in earlier Ephesians when he talked about having a walk worthy of your calling. There in chapter 4, as he kind of introduces this whole line of thinking, he says what you've got to do is to look at your relationships and you've got to determine what this is actually saying about your walk with God. As we look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, there's something we need to understand here. God is talking to children who are old enough to know the difference between right and wrong. Oftentimes when we think about this verse, we tend to relegate it down to, you know, maybe this is what we teach to 2- and 3-year-olds, and that certainly is something that needs to be taught to 2- and 3-year-olds. But as the apostle is writing, he's writing to young men and young women, children who were old enough to understand that, first of all, they had a relationship with God. Second of all, that relationship with God would impact their relationship with their parents. So, as he writes to the Ephesians, as he also writes to the Colossians in chapter 3 and verse 20, this is the point that he's going to make to them. But he takes it a step further. He also says in verse 1, not only to obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, he bears some more weight to this when he also pulls in from the Ten Commandments, as we look down in verse 2, the commandment to honor your father and mother. What the apostle is doing here is saying this is something God has always expected. This is nothing new. And in fact, when we look back to the Old Testament, we understand that a child who did not show honor to his mother and father, now of course we're talking about an older child here, could actually face the death penalty if he cursed his parents, if he treated his parents in a disrespectful way. And so the apostle is bringing that image back in to say to these young people, let me make this perfectly clear to you. What I'm talking about is a key role in your relationship to God. I want us to think about this word honor for just a minute. As we think about the word honor, you trace it back in the Hebrew language to its original meaning, and it says basically to be heavy. And we think, well, how does that have anything to do with honor? It's the idea that you're giving someone a heavy priority in life. You're showing someone importance in your life, that they are impressive in your life. Not a verse relating to parents, but just think about this verse as we consider the word. 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 6, as Samuel is being described here, he said to him, "Behold, there is a man of God in this city. He is a man who is held in honor." That's the same idea. The prophet of God was someone who was considered important, who was considered impressive in the lives of these people. And so just as these people were to honor their prophets, God is saying you also honor your parents in a very similar fashion. So we think about the idea of obedience. We think about the idea of honor. And so what we understand from the writings of Paul thus far is, as we have said, this is very much an early test of our faith. So, this morning, those of you who are 18 and under, who are still living in your parents' house, who still have this relationship where your parents are instructing you in what to do, this is what the Apostle Paul is saying. This is a test of how you walk. This is determining if you are having a walk that's worthy of your calling in the Lord. I want us to note, as we continue on down in chapter 6, the second part of verse 2. After Paul says, honor your father and mother, in parentheses, in most translations, we have, this is the first commandment with a promise. That particular part of this verse has created no end of discussion and commentary about what the apostle is saying. Again, perhaps I'm being a little too simplistically minded here, but it appears that it's very easy to understand. I think what the apostle is simply saying is this is one of your first commands. This is a primary command. If you don't get this one right, you're going to have trouble getting any of them right. And so as he says, honor your father and mother, what he's saying is look, this is a primary command. It's a command with a promise that you must get down very, very early in life. Now, why would the apostle say something of that nature? Well, we understand that a child who does not earn or grow to respect and to submit to his parents is going to have a very difficult time ever submitting to God. We talked several weeks ago in a lesson, again aimed primarily at young people, about the idea of the holy clothing of young people, how young people can be holy. And we talked about at that point how that God has expectations that we are learning the concepts of submission early in life, so that when we do come to the point where we're going to become Christians, where we're going to be a part of His family, we have learned what it means to submit, and therefore we more easily submit to God. I want to make that point again. When a child is in his parents' home, in her parents' home, there is a training that's going on there, not just in the relationship of parent and child, but also of young person and God. Let me give you two examples here. The Bible talks about people who failed in this regard. And I want us to look, first of all, at a man who the New Testament bears out very clearly he failed. But I want us to go back to his story just briefly in the Old Testament and to note something that's said about him here. You remember the man Esau, very little of any good is said about him in the Bible. We come to Genesis chapter 26. He's 40 years old, so I understand we're not talking about a kid here. We're talking about a man who in our age anyway, we would consider middle-aged or thereabouts. But it has something to do with his youth. When the verse tells us Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. And they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. What's all that talking about? Marriage customs were a lot different then than they are now. In that day and age, the parents had a huge say in it. In fact, many times, as even we see with Isaac and with Jacob, there was some amount of the parents picking out the bride. But it goes a little bit further than that. Esau chose for his wife women who would not acknowledge the Lord. Women who were of pagan society. Women who the Lord would eventually say, I want no one in Israel to have any part with these. And I believe as we look at the life of Esau, what we're seeing is a rebellion against his upbringing. What we're seeing is a man who did not listen to his parents, and that idea of they were bitter because Isaac and Rebekah knew that marrying a pagan woman would lead their son in a direction that he didn't need to go. Now, it's no surprise to us then when we come to the New Testament and we look at Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 16. As Esau is being described, it says that no one is sexually immoral or unholy like Esau. Now listen to what happened in his relationship with God, who sold his birthright for a single meal. For you know that afterward, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no chance to repent, though he sought it with tears. Here was Esau, who showed from a very early age he had no concern for following the ways of his parents, that translated into no concern for following the ways of God, where this birthright that he was entitled to as the firstborn, he treated very flippantly, and when he realized it was lost, he tried to get it back, but it was too late. But what I like to see in verse 16 of the chapter is how he's described as unholy. A man who was not with God. Let's look at a very opposite example. When we think about the idea of submission early on, Christ, as always, sets the perfect example. It's a passage in the book of Luke. Sometimes we forget, as we think about the early childhood of Jesus, we say that we don't know hardly anything about him, and that's true. Very little is told to us about him. But in Luke chapter 2, verses 51 and 52, Luke records this. He went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. Isn't that interesting? Of all of the things that God could have told us about the childhood of Jesus Christ, one of the things he says is that he was submissive to his parents, and his mother treasured up all these things in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. You ever considered the irony of this? Here was Jesus submitting to one of his own creation. Here was Jesus submitting to a woman who was there because of who he was. And we understand, though, that he illustrated the relationship expected between a parent and a child. And what's really interesting is that he really did know everything, didn't he? Sometimes children think they do. Jesus did. But yet he understood, this is what I need to do. This is the example that I need to set. And so to our younger people this morning, I want to make this point very clear to you. This is serious business that we're talking about. These are things that are determining your walk with the Lord. It's one of your first tests to determine your faithfulness. And I want you to note in the Bible, excuses are not accepted, as we talked about last week. Husbands don't love their wives because their wives are perfect. Wives don't submit to their husbands because their husbands are perfect. Children don't submit to parents because their parents are perfect. It's because of who we are in the Lord. And this must begin very, very early in life. Well, let's take a look at the second walk that we've been looking at in recent weeks. And that's the walk with caution. Where, once again, I know you're probably growing a little weary of this, but let me remind you one more time, it's like the high wire walker. That's what Paul is saying. You're looking at every step. Every step is the determination between life and death. And so the apostle here is talking about that. In fact, if you back up to verse 15 of chapter 5, he says, look carefully then how you walk. Walk with caution, not as unwise, but as wise. Now, I want you to take that passage and I want you to tie it in with verse 3 of chapter 6. That it may go well with you and that you may live long in the earth. Here is God saying to us, when you are walking with caution, when you are looking carefully at your step, you are going to have a better life. Very proverbial here in verse 3. Not a guarantee, but a general rule of what's going to happen. Your life is going to go better. So young people, what does it mean to walk with caution in this regard? The first thing, and I guess it's probably the first thing that our parents teach us very early on, is to listen to your surroundings. If you hear a car horn blowing, look. If you hear a siren screeching, look at it. If you hear your parents giving instruction, listen to them. I want us to go back to the book of Proverbs. We're going to look at several passages here over the next couple of points. But let's go back to chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. And as we look in verses 8 and 9, notice what the wise man says. Again, you'll recall that he's writing these first few chapters as though he's writing to his son, as though he's speaking to his son. He says in verses 8 and 9, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." What the Lord is saying here through Solomon is that the teachings of good parents are going to dress you up. The teachings of good parents are going to be a crown. They're going to be fine jewels around your neck. And how fortunate it is when a child hears the positive teachings of godly parents. Those of you like me who grew up with godly parents, you know the blessing of that. You know how that in your household you grew up knowing that God is respected, that God is someone who you're seeking to please. And so, young people, I would encourage you to listen to the things that your parents are telling you. And I'm going to say this to you. Typically, it's not going to be formal settings. Most of the time, it's not going to be occasions when you're sitting down over an open Bible. It's going to be things that your parents are instructing you in along the way. Very reminiscent of what the Lord told the Israelites in Deuteronomy in chapter 6 when He said, "And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart." Now listen to where these parents are to be teaching. "You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up." The idea is, this is life. Life with a godly parent is a life where you are receiving instruction in areas where you might not really be expecting it. But Solomon says to listen to these things. And the next step, he says, is when you hear these things, you need to apply them. You need to put them into action. Let's stay here in the book of Proverbs, but look over to chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15. And as we look down to verse 5, Solomon characteristically in the book is giving a contrast between the wise and the foolish. And he says in verse 5, "A fool despises his father's instruction, but whoever heeds reproof is wise or prudent." Here Solomon is saying, take the things that you're learning and put them into application. Sometimes that's hard to do. Because oftentimes youth can create the feeling that we're going to live forever and that we know everything. If you're old now, you remember the feeling. If you're young now, you may be grappling with that feeling. I know better. I know what I need to do. I don't need someone telling me these things. But on most occasions, that's just simply not the case. We need the wisdom of godly parents. And so my admonition to our younger people today is to respect the advice that's given by your parents. Let me give you just a couple of illustrations here. Sometimes that advice is offered by the fact that your parents give you assignments. They give you jobs to do around the house. You know why? You might call them slave drivers. You might say that it's free labor, child labor. You know what it really is? You're being taught a work ethic. You're being taught something that's going to help you in life. It's kind of interesting. I have to brag on my older two here. Not long ago, someone asked one of my younger sons to come work for them. And he did, and we got a text and said, "Just want to let you know, he works as hard as his older brother does. We like having them around." I tell you, that was the best thing I could have heard. Because here, the work ethic was kicking in. The learning was kicking in. So a parent who's kind of kicking up, or a child rather, who's kind of kicking up against a parent and saying, "I don't want to do these things." The Lord isn't saying you've got to enjoy it. The Lord's saying, appreciate what's being done. Let me say as well, discipline is learned by doing tasks, by completing homework assignments. Child says to his parents, "Why are you making me do homework?" The reason is the parent is teaching that child how to stick with something, how to see it to a conclusion, how to get the job done. So to our young people, listen to what your parents are saying. It is not going to be totally enjoyable right now. It's not going to be totally pleasant right now. But in the long run, what you're going to see is that your parents are doing what the Lord has told them to do so that you can have that worthy walk. So that you can walk with caution and carefulness in doing what they say. And then thirdly, I would say to our younger people is this, practice humility. In any relationship where God calls for submission, it's because He wants order in the army. Remember that? Submission is the idea that's found in the army. where you are submitting to someone to keep discipline in the ranks. It's what God's doing as well. But not only is it going to keep submission in His army, it's going to make for a happier home. Again, listen to the words of the wise man. Still here in chapter 15, look down to verse 20. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish man despises his mother. Look on over just a few chapters to chapter 23. And as we look down to verse 15, as Solomon once again is speaking to his son, he says, "My son, if your heart is wise, my heart too will be glad." It's amazing, young folks, that when you're doing the right thing, how much happier your parents are. When you're doing the right thing, when you are humbly submitting, you'll be amazed at what happy people they can be. And the reason for that is, it's because they understand you're appreciating that walk. That you're walking with caution. That you're walking in such a way to be worthy of your calling. But that's not where the apostle stops. Because we understand that there is always a counterbalance. And we remember the one more walk that we've been looking at, walking in love. Let me just remind you again, whenever God says submit, there is a counterbalance to the one under whom one is submitting. So as we saw with wives are told to submit, husbands are to love their wives. And as we look at children who are to obey their parents, there's the counterbalance of what parents are called on to do. And so we look in this case to Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. If you turn back over to the book of Ephesians, we find the instruction given here to fathers specifically. Some have said perhaps this applies to both parents, but the language is spoken to fathers, verse 4. Do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Counterbalance. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Fathers, two things are told here. The first one is this. You got to beware of being heavy-handed. I think that resonates well with most fathers. Because as we talked about in the marriage relationship, there is often a temptation for a man to want to plow ahead, to get it done, to get things accomplished, for everyone to cooperate in the most quick and most efficient way that there is, and that doesn't happen in a family. And so fathers are told here, you must be very careful in your own walk. You must walk in love toward your children so that you are not experiencing, they're not experiencing this heavy hand that may discourage them from the very thing that the Lord is trying to get them to be, and that's a faithful follower of His. And fathers are given something even more serious than that. Fathers are told that they are responsible for keeping the home in a godly direction. You'll recall in our lesson last week when we said that men don't get off easy in marriage. Woman comes along and says God picks on women. They have to submit. We counterbalanced. God tells men to love as Christ loved the church. Let me tell you, fathers don't get off easy here either. It's our responsibility. And the decisions that a father makes have always got to be made in the design of what is this going to do to help my children get to heaven? Sometimes those decisions are very, very unpopular. Sometimes you have people who don't understand why those decisions are made because they're not looking at it from the father's perspective of where he's saying, I've got to think in terms of the example that I'm setting, the kinds of things that my family is participating in, the kinds of things my kids are allowed to do, because it's my job for the first 18 or 19 years of this person's life is to try my best to get them walking in a worthy manner. And so for all of the fathers here this morning, I want to encourage you to think very soberly, very seriously about this responsibility. If you're a father and not a Christian, you need to think very seriously about that. If you're a father who's being rather lethargic in your duties toward Christ, you need to think very seriously about that. Because it is your job to get those children in the right direction. Are they always going to stay in the direction you send them? No. Some kids will go off and they'll come back. Some kids will go off, they'll never come back. But the apostle is saying here, as much as depends on you, set them on the right course. You'll notice in this section, there's nothing said about mothers. But I do believe there is a counterbalance for mothers as well. And I think we find that in the writings of Paul in another epistle, when he writes to Titus. And he tells Titus in his preaching in chapter 2 and verse 4 to train the young women to love their husbands and children. This is one of those passages I call a rocking passage, because you need to sit and rock and think about it to figure out what he's saying. Why would a mother need to be taught to love her children? If there was any more natural relationship in this world, it's a mother's love for her young. Look, even in the natural world, we talk about someone being a she-bear. We know what that means. A mother bear is going to protect her cubs at all costs. You watch a mockingbird and she'll almost hit you, attacking you, if her little birds are around and she thinks they're in danger. And a human mother is the same way. There may be those mothers out there who don't put their kids first. If you are one of those mothers this morning, I ask you to give that very serious thought. If you're putting anything other than your relationship to God before that of your children, you need to think about it very seriously. You need to consider what it is you're doing. This morning, let me offer what I think may be an idea that the apostle is getting at here. It may be not so much that a mother is not loving her children. She must simply be taught what that love demands. Because a mother's love many times may do things that, if she is not careful, will be detrimental to her children. Sometimes we've heard it described this way. She gives them smother love. Sometimes there's new definitions that come about. The one in education circles now is the helicopter mother. She's always there. She's always hovering. She's always around. She's always doing for her children. That's a dangerous thing. Because part of loving your child is teaching your child how to be self-sufficient. Part of loving your child is teaching that child that you must stand on your own two feet. And sometimes that means a mother, in loving her children, has got to let them learn how to fail in something. A mother who sees her child failing, her natural reaction is, let me jump in and let me fix it so you're not going to be hurt. Sometimes that's the worst thing that can be done. Many times the best lessons we learn are the lessons we learn in our failures. And I would add one more thing to that. A mother has got to learn to let her children grow up. It's awfully easy to want children to stay young. Just very recently, several times, Pam and I have sat there at the table all by ourselves. Kids in every direction, they're off with somebody. One day I said, this is just weird. You know, it's just weird sitting here in the quiet, and it's going to happen. Kids grow up, kids leave. And sometimes the mother's got to make sure she's cutting that apron string. And so as Paul is telling Titus, go and teach these mothers how to love their children, perhaps he's not saying there it's this natural love of taking care of them. Perhaps what he's saying is you got to give them the right kind of love. That just as fathers are training those children so that they can stand up spiritually, a mother is not weakening her child by trying to do everything for the child, but letting them learn. And the beauty of this is, together, both parents are working to create a home where submission is made much easier, and a child is learning to walk worthy of his calling in that relationship to the Lord, because submission to those parents is a joyous thing. And that's the kind of household that God wants, a respectful household. And so whichever side of that we may be on, we're learning to do what pleases Him to show Him the respect that He deserves.